You're listening to The Morning Magazine. It's Friday, September 2nd, 2022. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. I'm your host, Jack Armstrong. Coming up on today's program, it's the first Friday of the month, which means we check in with the Naturally team. This time, they celebrate this summer's bumper crop of wild choke cherries. Then, we hear about the importance to reading to kids. And finally, we have Sports Talk, our weekly regional sports roundup. At 8:30, it's the BBC. Then Connections comes your way. As always, the phone lines will be open. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative brings you 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. That's all still ahead. But first, these local and regional headlines with KGN News, Kiara Damari.
On Thursday, the Boulder County Planning Commission denied a 15-year mining proposal made by CEMEX and Parks and Open Spaces unanimously, 6-0. The proposal was to extend a cement plant and mining permit near Lyons for 15 years in exchange for 2,000 acres of land. Boulder County commissioners also voted unanimously Thursday to ban gun shows at the county's fairgrounds. County Commissioner Martha Loachman led the charge to change the county's fairgrounds manual, saying that they were inconsistent with county stance and she was concerned about the unregistered ghost guns that are largely sold at fairground gun shows. She told the Daily Camera, "The gun shows just don't reflect the county's commitment and our strategic priorities, and the goals of the fairgrounds to have a thriving community and a healthy quality of life." Boulder County, along with neighboring Broomfield and Superior, passed local gun violence prevention measures in June after the Uvalde shooting that killed 19 elementary students and 2 teachers. No one from the public commented on the gun show change at Thursday's hearing. The last gun show held at the fairgrounds appears to have been the Longmont Hunting and Sportsman's Gun Show in June. Police can now address amplified noise from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. due to a new noise ordinance that was voted in favor on Thursday. The new ordinance allows police to check out a house without a complaint or a decibel meter. Officers can now try to guess if they can hear the house from 200 feet away. Thursday evening, at an apartment complex in the 300 block of El Dorado Boulevard in Broomfield, the North Metro Fire Rescue District responded to a fire at around 6:45 p.m. According to the Daily Camera, the fire crews contained the flames to the rooftop of the complex and put it out just before the fire spread inside the building. One employee reported being injured but are not yet releasing the details and say the cause of the fire is unknown. Artificial intelligence software and written prompts created an art piece that won first place in the digital painting category at the Colorado State Fair. Jason Allen, the artist, said that he used AI as a lavish sort of space opera scene. According to 9 News, several artists on social media criticized Allen for submitting the work and refused to call him an artist. The AI is a paintbrush-like tool, and there's a creative force and mind behind it. There's an imagination and an author behind the prompts, Allen said to 9 News. The Adams County Board of Health announced yesterday that they have appointed Dr. Kelly Wiedenbach as the executive director for their upcoming county health department, making it one step closer to opening a new countywide health department. For decades, healthcare services in Adams County were managed as part of the Tri-County Health Department, which combined healthcare services across Arapahoe and Douglas counties. The collaboration dissolved last year after Douglas County withdrew from the department after disagreements about mask mandates and COVID-19 vaccines. Adams County Health Department's new leader, Kelly Wiedenbach, has an extensive background in epidemiology, administration, policy, public health, and management. The Adams County Board of Health, Wiedenbach, and the other members of the County Health Department said that they hope to support the community with immunizations, nursing home visits, increased testing for diseases, and sexual health care resources. As of now, the new County Health Department is almost nearing launch condition and filling in staff positions and is scheduled to take over the Tri-County Health Department on January 1st, 2023. The Colorado State Court of Appeals in Denver upheld a lower court's decision to deny the city of Thornton the right to build a water pipeline across northern Larimer County, north of Fort Collins, this week. Officials in Thornton have campaigned for several years to build the pipeline, which would pump water from about 20,000 acres of farms down to Thornton. Opponents of the water pipeline says there's no need for it, and Thornton should run the water down the Cache La Puda River through Fort Collins until it reached the town of Windsor, and then divert the water into the pipeline, thus restoring flows to critically endangered 12-mile section of the Puda River. "We've told Thornton for over 10 years that the water should flow from the Puda River through Fort Collins," said Gary Walkner of Save the Puda. This potentially is a win-win project, but Thornton refuses to use the river as a conveyance and continues to waste everyone's time and money in court. Once again, we offer to collaborate with Thornton rather than litigate, said Walkner. By working together, we can restore the Poudre River and Thornton can get the water. Thornton must now decide if it will appeal the ruling to the Colorado Supreme Court or propose a new pipeline route in Lambert County or let the water flow down the Poudre River to Windsor. Today, there is a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3 p.m., mostly sunny with a high near 90. West-northwest winds 6 to 10 miles per hour becoming northeast in the afternoon. Winds could get as high as 16 miles per hour. Outside the Boulder Station, it's currently 68 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Jack Armstrong. It's the first Friday of the month, which means we get a look at the natural world on the Nature Almanac.
It's September. What's happening in the natural world? Here's Boulder naturalist Steve Jones.
Well, it's a beautiful, cool, late summer morning here in Bear Canyon in the Boulder Mountain Park. Those of us living in South Boulder have been reveling in the monsoon rains this summer. Since July 20, we've received more than 5 inches of rain. And it's sort of the opposite of the last two summers that were very dry. This summer we had a dry spring and now a really fruitful summer. And it's quite beautiful. There's still a lot of greenery up here. You have the sumac berries, you have the wild plums. Of course, we have apples up here that were planted by Europeans. But I think the biggest beneficiary of all this moisture has been the chokecherries this year. We're standing amid really healthy, beautiful chokecherry bushes. It's sort of like Christmas for chokecherries here. Now, these chokecherries are deep, deep purple in color. That means they are ripening. Oh, there's a hummingbird. Two hummingbirds coming into the chokecherry. Ooh, that female's about 4 feet away from us. She just perched. Now they're looking for insects. Many of the peoples of the Western Plains described the last full moon of the summer as the chokecherry moon. And, you know, the bears will get these very soon. You'll see the bear scat along the trail here, and giant bear scats just filled with chokecherry pits. But they haven't come down here yet. I'm not sure why. Yeah, you can hear the scolding catbird, and then looks like a chickadee is finding insects in the bush. When I'm out in the field, I eat chokecherries. It's forbidden to pick any wild fruits in the Boulder Mountain Park because we need them for the wildlife, especially the black bears, who without chokecherries they'd be in a lot of trouble. But I did pick a few in my backyard. So I thought we would share a couple here. I think they're unusually sweet this year. You know, the name chokecherry is because they're very astringent if you pick them when they're young. But Shelley, let's try them and see what they taste like.
They're still a little astringent
for you. For me, this is pretty good. And what I would normally do is wait till the first frost hits and they shrivel up like raisins and they lose almost all their astringency. But this was really the number one source of vitamin C on the Great Plains. And they're also strikingly beautiful. The beautiful dark purple berries. Onyx is a great description. Anyway, this is part of the gifts given to us by nature. And the Lakota and many other tribes choose this time of the year to celebrate the Sun Dance, which is a celebration of the gift of life from the sun. Chokecherries are part of those ceremonies. If you'd like to know more about chokecherries and their ceremonial uses, there's some excellent articles in the Lakota Times, which is easy to find online. One of the titles is Kanpa Chokecherries. So I think when we're out here walking, we can photograph them, look at them, honor them, and if you have a big backyard, it's very likely you have chokecherries growing in your backyard or along the sidewalk near where you live, and you can taste them from time to time. And just relish that flavor, which is the flavor of the gift of life.
Steve Jones is the author of the new book, Nourishing Waters, Comforting Sky, and co-author of Butterflies of the Colorado Front Range.
Dr. Nikki Gonzalez's one-year term as Colorado State Historian just finished in August. She was the first Latina to hold the position. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KVNF's Laura Palmisano spoke with Dr. Gonzalez about the role that Latinos have played in the labor movement in the region.
So the Latino communities have shaped Colorado in really important ways with their labor. When you think about the contributions to the coal mining industry in southern Colorado and also Boulder County, you see that impact. You also see it in the agricultural fields of southern and central and northern Colorado in places like the potato fields in the San Luis Valley and the sugar beet fields in northern Weld County and Larimer counties. So through their physical labor, as well as places like meat packing houses outside of Denver and railroad work, so those really heavy industries that really shaped the landscape of Colorado, shaped the economy, and shaped race relations in Colorado as well, and labor relations, because there's a large number of Latinos who have served in labor organizing roles, and notably in the meatpacking industry here in Denver, where my own grandfather was a very active union member. So in those heavy industries, as well as opening businesses, whether they be restaurants or barbershops or print shops, you know, often the types of businesses where you don't need a lot of financing and you don't need a lot of education. And because in a society that often treated Latinos as second-class citizens or denied them access to education and to financing, those were industries that they were able to enter and be very successful in.
As a historian, you study the past, but looking to the future, what are your hopes for this state?
Ooh, that's a great question. So my hopes for Colorado, one would be to teach a more full, a more true version of both U.S. history and Colorado history to our youth, beginning at a young age. I want people to be honest, you know, about the good and the bad of the past and to be able to reconcile some of that. I think there's a lot of promise when we're talking about like History Colorado, which is the State Historical Society, the work that is being done with particularly the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes around the Sand Creek Massacre gives me hope. I mean, there has been about a decade of negotiation and dialogue between the state and the tribes about how to represent that history at the State Historical Museum. And that'll be opening in November of this year. And I'm so excited to see what the final product is. And so kind of collaborations like that give me hope. And that's what I hope for the future. And that the other thing I hope is that we will use our knowledge of the past to inform our decisions, whether they be education policies or housing policies or, you know, anything around civil rights, the use of our environmental resources, which, you know, a lot of wisdom sits in our past.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Gonzalez.
Laura, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for reaching out.
That was Dr. Nikki Gonzalez, a noted historian and professor of history and vice provost for diversity and inclusion at Regis University in Denver. She is also a member of History Colorado's State Historian Council. Gonzalez was appointed Colorado State Historian last year by Governor Jared Polis for a one-year term. She was the first Latino to hold that position. I'm Laura Palmisano.
That interview from KVNF was shared with us via Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a network of public media stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico. The Boulder Public Library and Boulder Valley School District are creating more services to support Spanish-speaking parents and their kids. KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with Boulder librarian Melanie Borsky-Howard about the library's new bilingual story time.
I've been working at the Boulder Public Library for 20 years. I love what I do. I'm in the youth services area, and I read stories to children, and of course help kids find books as well.
Who knows? Maybe you had to deal with one of my rascals, because I used to come to the library a lot with them and run around with them. And Gara got me into reading in Spanish long ago, so when I couldn't work.
Yes, I miss Gara. She's a wonderful addition, and she started the conversations in English that went to conversations in Spanish. She's done a lot for this library.
Where is she now?
I don't know. Yeah, I had lunch with her a while back, but I haven't. I don't know.
It's time to try to reach out. What's your name again, and what do you do?
Melanie Borsky-Howard, and I am a youth services specialist here at the library, and I do story times.
That's so fantastic. At what time are the stories? And there's a bilingual one, too.
Mm-hmm. The stories are every day at 10:15. Fridays, it's online at 10:15. Tuesday is the bilingual in Spanish and English. We also have Saturdays at 10:15, too. And then a musical story time, Thursdays at 4 o'clock.
Why do you think these spaces, these public spaces, are crucial for the community, especially for those that need some support?
Well, for children and parents especially, because early literacy is so important for children. Getting your child ready to read at age 5 is imperative. You know, a child's brain development is so busy between age 0 to 3. There's little sponges, so it's really important to show them books, show them words, show them the different practices that we do to get kids ready to read. And this is what we do here in the children's area specifically. It's really, really important.
School's going to start soon, and I remember when my kids had to take those exams, and we were always worried because maybe they were not going to be at the level. What's the level? What will you recommend to those that are sending or about to send the kids back to school to make them feel confident about being at the level?
Let them read if whatever they want. If they don't have anything exactly they want to read, play them a book on tape or a book on a CD. Let them read what they love to read, because just being around books and having you read to them too is going to get them ready to go to school and be ready. I mean, reading is the fundamentals for math, for everything. So just start reading to them now to get them ready to go to school.
And I think that reading out loud is essential, because we learn because we have 2 ears and 1 mouth. In my case, I'm always saying, I need to listen more and speak less.
Absolutely. And not only reading aloud, you have that rhythm. So the rhythm of the words, just like this is why we say music and singing is so important for children too, because that heartbeat, that first rhythm, starts with the rhythm of the words, and thus reading out loud. Singing out loud is excellent for your children. And we have all sorts of things here at the library that emphasizes music, singing. We do infant massage classes. Well, no, wait, we don't have... I was going to put that in there, but you can exit that out, right? We have lots of different things to get your children ready for school.
And not only children. Adults can also come and enjoy this space that is free and a public space to occupy. Thank you so much for talking with me. I have been speaking with Melanie Borsky-Howard. She is the Youth Service Specialist here at the Boulder Public Library. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better. Thank you.
Now, up next, it's Sports Talk.
You know, I heard the K in KGNU stands for sports. What? No, that's dumb. It stands for community. Hello and welcome back to Sports Talk with Jimmy. I am your host, Jimmy Searfoss, and we took a week off, but we are back now on air, and it's nice. Guys, it is the golden age of sports right now. High school sports are kicking off, college sports are kicking off, professional sports have been around for a minute. The dog days of summer are coming to an end in the sports world. That also means the University of Colorado's Buffaloes are back onto the football field, and they will open up their season tonight against TCU. And while that's a special occasion by itself, CU is going to take the time to honor a late legend who was just inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame in August. Cliff Branch is the first Buffalo to ever be inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame. His legacy as a Raider is what got him into the Hall of Fame, but he would not have gotten that NFL opportunity without his time spent as a Buffalo. Branch came from a junior college in Texas to Colorado in 1970. People would ask him, why did he decide to come to Boulder? It's so cold and Texas is so hot. It's such a difference. What are you doing in Boulder? And he said, it's because he fell in love with the city and the scenery here. Branch spent 2 years with the team until getting drafted in the fourth round of the 1972 NFL Draft. When he played, what stood out the most was his speed. And that speed saw more than just the football field. Branch was an excellent track athlete as well. In the 1972 NCAA Championships, he ran a 10-second flat 100-meter dash. That was a school record that still stands to this day 50 years later. He was a part of a 4x100 relay team that at the time was one of the fastest in the world. He would go on to win two Big 8 championships in the indoor 60-yard dash. On the football field, though, he took the reins of a team that would go on to become the third-ranked team in the nation in 1971. He would go on and win the award for most valuable player on the CU Buffaloes team. His speed was so electric, especially on kick returns, where he had tremendous success. He set a record in his 2 years with the team in touchdowns scored on kick returns. That record stood for 30 years. Although Branch passed in 2019, CU will honor his memory by wearing throwback helmets inspired by the ones he would wear in the 70s. This is a gold base helmet with CU labeled on each temple. Down the middle are two parallel black stripes with one white stripe running between them. There will also be a ceremony featuring friends, family, and former teammates of Branch between the first and second quarters. Back in 2010, Branch was elected into the CU Sports Hall of Fame. Afterward, he was quoted as saying, I feel truly blessed. I am a Buff all the way. And it looks like that is just about all the time we have for today. This has been Sports Talk with Jimmy. Make sure you tune in next week at this same time for the next episode. I've been your host, Jimmy Searfoss on KGNU.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Jack Armstrong. Special thanks to Alexis Kenyon, Kiara Damari, Rosangolo Gombeder, Jimmy Searfoss for their help with today's program. Stay tuned for Connections. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC. And but first, before we go, we have a hot, hot Labor Day weekend. It's going to be great. Today, there's going to be a 20% chance of showers, thunderstorms after 3, maybe, but mostly sunny, near 90. But the next 3 days, like I said, hot, 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 that's 3 days of hot. Friday, in particular, is going to be really hot with a high of 91. Ranging all throughout the Labor Day weekend, we're going to see very nice weather. We hope you have a great weather weekend. Now, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us today on the Morning Magazine. Now, and coming up next is the BBC. I've been Jack Armstrong. Thank you.